Hi, my name is Alen. I'm a business designer and welcome to the Beyond Users podcast, where we learn about business to become better designers who not only solve user challenges, but also achieve business goals. In the 12th episode, I spoke with Taco Carlier, a co-founder and CEO of Venmove, an Amsterdam-based company that creates really awesome commuter bikes. Taco is an industrial designer who turned his love for bikes, design, and business into a really successful and interesting company, which is disrupting the bike industry. Actually, it's not just disrupting the bike industry, it's also disrupting itself. The company recently launched Venmove Plus, a subscription service for bikes, which basically means they have changed their own business model. So we specifically talked about how the company, Venmove, prepared its business for a subscription service launch. Then we also talked about a new service called Bike Hunter, which is basically a service that helps its customers or subscribers find and return their bikes if they are lost or stolen. And we also talked about the advantages and disadvantages of a closed design system, because Venmove is an example of such closed system, because the company actually produces all products and has invented all products itself and provides all services by themselves. Just one more thing before diving into the episode. I've recently created an email course called Measuring Design, where I explain what are design metrics and how you can use them to measure your design work. And not only that, but also how you can present it to non-designers to basically show the value of your work. It's a free 5-day email course with a nice framework that I call Design Metric Canvas that you can use on your projects. So to get access to the course, please head to beyondusers.com. And now, without further ado, here's a conversation with Taco. Okay, well, Taco, thanks a lot for taking the time. I really appreciate it. Let's maybe begin by talking, where does the idea for Venmove come from?
I think the first idea popped up when I was riding a bike in New York. I was on a business trip for a few days in New York back in 2006. And I always did it. When I was in a foreign city, I always rented a bike because I believe it's a great way to explore a city. But especially in New York, yeah. I found out what a great city for cycling it is. My favorite bike lane is over Brooklyn Bridge. And the cycling lane along the Hudson is just beautiful. But I didn't see many cyclists on the road. So that was, for me, kind of the moment when my designer brain started thinking, why are not many more people cycling, and why, what's the difference with Amsterdam, where 55% of all commutes is done by bike? So how can we change bicycle design to get more people on bikes in cities like San Francisco, Amsterdam, Paris, London, and Berlin, and Tokyo? That was like the main question with which Venmove started.
Awesome. So after you had this idea, what was the next step you took?
I already was an entrepreneur. I studied industrial design engineering in Delft. And during my studies, I started my first company together with my brother. And so the first step after my bike ride is in New York was a lot of discussions with my brother for 2 years about what the perfect city bike would look like, how we should approach that, what we should do. And I have to add here that we started a small business besides our own business, which was importing a bicycle brand from so we were the distributors of a folding bicycle brand. So we were already learning a little bit about the bicycle business, Yeah, so the first step was lots and lots of discussions during evenings in the bar with my brother, Thies.
Yeah. So in one of the videos on your website or on YouTube, you were saying that the bike industry and bike business is horrible and that nobody is talking and thinking about the users, so the bikers. So I guess you did talk to them, right? So what did you find out? What was wrong?
Good question. I wouldn't say that it's horrible, but so one of the big issues is that the most bicycle producers, they deliver to bicycle shops, and the bicycle shops, they have different objectives than the end consumers have. Mm-hmm. So by talking directly to the end consumers, you discover different things. And that's one of the most important things we did. Also, of course, we have a lot of experience ourselves living in Amsterdam, where everything is on a bike. We were practically born on a bike, so a lot of ideas came from that too. And then you mix that and combine that, and you'll discover the issues in current bike design. Now, one of the big, and maybe it's not issue. I think what we wanted to do is how to convert the traditional Dutch bike that everybody uses for commuting. How can we make that more suitable for foreign cities? Mm. Like Amsterdam, of course, is very flat and very dense, very small city. But Berlin, Paris, London are much more hilly, are much bigger, and in case of New York and Paris, also much warmer in the summer. So what can we change in bicycle design to make the Dutch bicycles more suitable for foreign city? That was the starting point of a move.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any examples of what you found out, so maybe in the future?
We started with the lights on Dutch bikes. Always had the dynamo with all the external wires and the very fragile lights. So in most new bikes, after 6 months, the lights were already demolished. So that was something we discovered in our daily lives, and we checked that with friends, and everybody had the same problem. So that was the start of the integrated light. So we have together with Philips, we developed the light system that is completely integrated inside the bicycle frame. And not only the lights, also the wires, everything is integrated. So therefore, the lights keep on working for years and years. And we developed a very efficient LED system with Philips, so it's really bright, so the lights work in daytime too, and everything is integrated. So that was like the starting point, integrated lights. Then we continued with an integrated lock. That was 9 years ago. We always had issues with the lock, which is which you had to tie around the bicycle frame, damages the frame. So we continue with that. And then slowly, year over year, we solved more and more barriers for cyclists. And it turned into Enfamove turned into a bicycle tech company with nowadays our bikes have a Vodafone 2G connection, a data connection. They have a Bluetooth connection. They have tracking and tracing. It's evolved more and more into a tech bike.
Yeah, and it looks amazing also. Like when you were talking about the wires and the lights, it just like now the lights also feel like they're almost the flagship of the whole frame. They just look amazing. So for all the listeners, just head to the website on the Beyond Users and check. I'll put some pictures there so you can see. It really looks awesome.
Yeah, but the funny thing is we always focus on functionality. We never look into design. And we believe that if we keep focusing on functionality, then a beautiful bike appears. But in the beginning, many people didn't like our design because it was too too robust, too a little bit lump. So it's a design that you love or hate, and, okay, and we believe that's really important.
But that's also good. So yeah, you also once said that the bike industry is very hard to disrupt. What makes it so hard to disrupt?
It is the setup of the bicycle industry with the traditional bike shops is really conservative. So all the producers, most of them mainly produce the bicycle frames, but they don't produce all the parts. They purchase all the parts. And in that way, it's very difficult to change the design of the bike because you have to talk to over 100 suppliers to change things. And I think we kind of reinvented the way bikes are designed because we decided to do everything in-house, to develop all the parts ourselves. So that started with the lights, then the lock, then the saddle, the chain guard, the mud guards, the steering bar, and then way through the electronics and the software. We all do that in-house to try to create one integrated design. I think we can compare it a little bit with the car industry. In the 1920s, yeah, 1930s, cars were, yes, more like the producers only built the frame of the car, and then they bought all the parts. So a car was somehow a pile of parts. Mm-hmm. It didn't came together, and then in the 40s and 50s, integrated design came, and everything was more welded into merged into one product, and that's how we know cars now. And I think bikes are now in that process.
Mm-hmm. What would you say was the biggest tipping point in your story?
For us, it was the electric bike. Mm-hmm. So the first 5 years of a company were mainly focusing on traditional bikes, but we redesigned the way the frame was built, so we can integrate parts in that, and we did that for the lights and the lock and all kind of stuff. But it took us 5 years to discover that we also could integrate, because we made the frame in such a way, we could also completely integrate the batteries, computer and motor management and the motor in the front wheel. And when we found that out, we pretty easily could develop one of the best electric bikes for urban use. And that's what we introduced in 2014, and then everything changed. We were focusing too long on Amsterdam, and in Amsterdam you don't need an electric bike that hard, but it took us 5 years to see that electric bikes can really change the way people commute. When you're cycling on a daily basis in New York or Paris, London too, the distances are too big, and it's too hilly to arrive without sweating. So cycling is only an alternative for very fit young people. Because of electric bike, that changes, and it makes it possible for everyone to commute on a bike. And I think that people are slowly discovering that now in cities around the globe, and that will change anything. That will change everything. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of integrated the design we had together with new technology in battery and motor management, and that's brought us to the electrified.
Mm. I actually tested the electrified bike a few weeks back, and it just feels amazing. I specifically like the turbo button.
Yeah. Yeah. You still have to pedal, but it assists up to 80% of the power. If you hit the turbo button, even a little bit more. So it makes it possible to commute to your work without sweating.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But you also recently launched another thing. So there have been many innovations recently. So
yeah, it's going. It's we kind of worked on this for 5 or 6 years, and it feels like everything is coming out now.
The second part is this Venmov Plus, right? Which is a subscription for bikes.
Yeah.
Where does the idea come from?
Yeah, I think this is also a way to remove the barriers that people encounter that want to go ride a bike a little bit more. And one of the things is the purchasing price. And with the subscription model, it's kind of we saw the popularity of bike sharing of the Philippe systems in Paris, and I think it's called Next Bike in Berlin.
Yeah.
So more and more people are willing to ride a bike but not own a bike, and we believe with this subscriptions model, Femove Plus, we can provide that. So people pay a monthly fee and they have their own bike, and we take care of maintenance and insurance. And there's a nice extra perk that if you let's say you live in Berlin, so you have your own bike on a monthly, for your own use. But if you are in visiting Amsterdam, New York, or San Francisco, or any city where we have a brand store, then you can borrow a bike in our brand store. So you can ride the same bike in New York as you're riding in Berlin.
Mm-hmm. I was actually also checking this out, and I was pretty amazed by the prices, right? So the so-called key fee was like 300 euros, and then you pay 20 euros per month, which is probably also then converted to dollars. I was wondering, like, financially speaking, like, how does this make sense for you instead of selling bikes?
I think it doesn't make sense in that case that I'd rather maybe sell the bike. It's easier. But I think this is the next step in online sales. So in the traditional model, you went to, like 10 years ago, you went to a bike shop and you bought a bike. Now that changed to online sales where you buy it online. More and more people do that. And the next step in that is that you don't buy it anymore, but subscribe to a bike. And I think that's what's the cool thing about it from a design perspective is that it really connects us even more with the customer. So if the customer doesn't like his product, it gives us as a company an incentive to make the bikes better, to make them more robust, to make them more reliable. Because if people don't like the bike, they can always end their subscription. So if people don't like the bike, they can just send it back. And that gives us the incentive to make the bikes better. And I think that's the good thing in this model. Mm-hmm. In the old model where you just sold bikes, you just have to as a bike company, you just have to endure the warranty period and then you're off. But in this case, we stay responsible for the health of the bike. And also, when people return it, we have to take care of it. We have to refurbish it to make it suitable for a new customer, or we have to get rid of it in a good way. It's much more difficult for a company, but it's also the future. And that's why I like it. And it's at FOMO, you could say we love problems. We love to create new problems for ourselves. This will create problems because, I don't know yet what I'm going to do if everybody after 4 or 5 years brings his bike back. So I create a new problem for myself. But when we run into these problems sooner than the other company, we also find solutions sooner than the other companies. So we have to create as many problems as possible. And the subscription model for us is a great way for us as a company to create new problems.
So, you know, as a business designer, I'm very interested in how did you calculate the price that's kind of necessary to keep this all running and that it makes sense for you to be selling the monthly subscription. Is there any like process you took to kind of came up with those? I mean, of course, probably there is. So basically,
I think it's a step-by-step process. Mm-hmm. So we could have never done it if we're not already direct selling bikes. I mean, if you work with bike shops, you don't know how much of your bikes of your consumers return for repairs. Mm-hmm. But because we own the entire system, the shops, and we also provide the after service to our current clients, it's possible for us, we know exactly how much of our customers run into problems. Mm-hmm. We also know which problems they have, which gives us the opportunity to improve the product. I read an article which I love in the Huffington Post. It's called Digital Native Vertical Brands. So vertical brands that own the entire production chain, but were mainly operating in a digital field. And I think that describes Vemu very well. And it also, one of the main differences, it said that digital native vertical brands have a very fast iterative product design circle. So we get direct consumer feedback from our consumers, and we can we directly divert this to our product designers, who can improve the products right away. And that's the first step of this. If you don't control that environment, you cannot go to subscriptions. A second thing is solving the bike theft, because we insurance is included, which is in fact I think even a little bit cooler than insurance, because we have a global bike hunter team.
Yeah.
So first of all the bikes have alarms, so if you touch them an alarm will go off first, softly and louder after the thief keeps riding the bike. Then the owner gets a message if he knows that somebody is messing with his bike, if maybe it might be a relative or something. So if the owner confirms that he thinks the bike is stolen, then our bike hunters are are activated, and they start tracking the bike. If they find it, they have 2 weeks to bring it back to the consumer. If they can't find it back within 2 weeks, the owner gets a new bike. So we are doing that now for 2 years. It's getting more and more successful. At the moment, we find 70%, 70 of our bikes back within 2 weeks.
Wow.
So that was the second step. So first we solved the durability. The second step was solving bike theft, and now we feel confident enough to offer the subscription model.
Mm.
So the pricing was relatively easy, because it's all it's all hidden in the data we already have, and we can just pop it out of the data and find out how much we have to offer. Although I have to say, we do a lot testing in the practice, so it could easily be that we still change the prices a little bit in the future, depending on how it works. It also depends a lot on, can we finance the growth of this model? If it's growing very fast, can we finance it? If we manage to solve that issue, prices can go even lower.
Mm-hmm. So there are many interesting points in your answer, and I just want to, maybe let's start with one and then we can work our way back. So speaking about the bike theft and bike hunters, this is one of the things that got me excited about Venmoth. When I saw that, you know, like when you buy a bike, usually the reason why I bought a cheap bike was because I was just afraid it's going to get stolen. But then when you have this peace of mind insurance, it just makes the whole buying decision like different. And also the fact that it's not just the insurance, but it's almost like a service where you give people the bike back is even better, I think. Which brings me to the question is like, how did it affect the sales numbers having the theft insurance?
I can't say everything is on the, it's all because of the bike hunters, but the company is growing very rapidly. We are doubling our turnover every year, and this year maybe even tripling. So it's not only because of the bike hunters, but people do love the bike hunters. It's a, and you're completely right. It's not about getting that specific bike back. It's about a bigger picture. We believe that the fact that people are afraid of bike theft is the number one reason that people keep buying what we call disposable bikes.
Yeah.
So they go to the supermarkets, the Walmart, and they buy, I don't know, $150 bike. And we believe that's the real problem. The real problem is when somebody decided, maybe commuting by bike is a good idea for me, and then he buys a cheap bike, and then after 3 months, the wheel bends, or he get a flat tire, or whatever happens, and he quits cycling again. So we want to convince people to buy or subscribe to a proper bike. So, because we believe then they will ride more. So if we solve bike theft, it will help get more people on bikes. So that's the first step. And you're completely right. I think insurance doesn't solve the problem. You have a personal connection with your bike. You want your own bike back. Even if I had some bikes insured and then in the past, and you get a new bike, but you still keep looking for your old bike. You still want to know where it is, and you want to know the story. Is it did you lost it, or did it? Is it who stole it? And I think that's something we try to solve. And our bike hunters go very far. I mean, they went all the way to Morocco, Romania, out of Holland, to find stolen bikes back. And
I wanted to ask you, how do you actually make these bike hunters work? Is it like a partner that you work with, or do you actually employ these people?
No, we don't work with partners. We do everything ourselves. Almost everything in our company, we do it ourselves. Mm-hmm. So the bike hunters is more like it's not a full-time job. So it's people in our customer service department who apply for the bike hunter role. Mm. And actually, it's so much fun that a lot of people do it for fun at night, a lot of our employees. It's like sometimes in like in the weekend, or we have a group with the company in Slack, and then a stolen bike pops up, and everybody goes. Sometimes I have to halt the bike hands a little bit to be safe. Now the problem is it's the bike hunters is just the people. It's more than that. It's a complete system. The Vodafone tracking 2G system, the Bluetooth system, our servers, also the fact that we have the closed system. I mean, we don't work with external bike shops. So if somebody bought a stolen bike from the thief, he eventually will come back to one of our stores, and all the bikes are registered. So when somebody comes in, we know it's stolen, and we try to find out what happened together with the customer, and try to solve the case. So bike hunter is bigger than just the people that hunt bikes.
Oh, that's very clever. I haven't thought of that they actually have to come back, right?
Okay. Yeah, it's I tell you, it's even cooler than that. If someone reports a bike stolen in the smartphone app, a signal goes to the bike, and the lights don't work anymore, the motor doesn't work anymore, the lock doesn't work anymore, so nothing practically works anymore, so you cannot use the bike. So what happens is, everyone who bought this stolen bike will come to the store very soon and say, hey, can you fix my lights? Or can you fix the motor? It doesn't work. We even had a customer who bought a stolen bike, was riding it for 3 months without knowing that it was an electric bike. So he came to our store that the lights didn't work. And we said, yeah, you know, it's an electric bike, and he didn't know it. So that was a kind of funny story.
Yeah.
We kind of switched off the bike from a distance, so people have to come back to the store to get it working again.
Mm-hmm. Do you see the number of Wenmoth bikes being stolen go down because of this service? You know, like maybe the bike thefts now know that Wenmoth is just, you know, you shouldn't steal it and let's just leave it.
Yeah, it's hard to tell because we think we see a small difference in Amsterdam. Of course, Amsterdam is our hometown, so we have most of the relatively the most bikes are on the street in Amsterdam, and there we see that it's a small decline in the theft of new bikes. So we believe eventually this will happen. Yeah, we only recently introduced the alarm, so that's a really new thing. So we already had the 2G connection, the Bluetooth and the electronic lock, but now we also have the alarm, and we believe that that will dramatically reduce the amount of theft, because when you have, as a thief, when you have to choose between 10 bikes and one of them has an alarm, I think you think twice before you get that bike. So that will definitely help.
Makes sense. So you mentioned that you have a closed system, which has its advantages, but I guess also disadvantages, right? So I'm just thinking, like, what happens if you don't live in one of the cities where you have a brand store? How is then the experience for the user different?
Yeah, so when you are just at the moment for the subscription model, we only offer that to cities where we do have a brand store, just to start things up. If you are a traditional customer who bought one of our bikes and you live are not living close to a brand store, so when people run into an issue, we have a service desk and people can call, and together with modern technology, like making some photos on the smartphone, WhatsApping that to us, we can kind of discover what the issue is. Also, when it's an electronic problem, we just log into the bike and check if we can find the issue. And then we'll send parts over within 24 hours, and people can choose to repair it for themselves with the help of a YouTube movie, or they can go to their neighbor, or they can go to a local bike store. So we believe that model in the future will work better than the traditional model, where you bring your bike to a bike store and you have hundreds, maybe thousands of different bikes, and the bike store has to determine where to get the parts and everything. So we believe this is the future of bike repairing. Also, we go further and further with sensor technology. So connecting our sensors to the data connection of the bike. So in the near future, we will be able to discover more and more issues from a distance. And we can determine, in the perfect world, you would have the reserve parts in your house before you know there's an issue.
Oh, cool.
On some parts, we are already there. In the future, we want to go there more and more.
Mm-hmm. Well, this all sounds amazing. So I need to flip now and say, ask you, like, what was the most challenging part of setting this up?
I think one of the most challenging of setting up the subscription model was financing it and the whole environment behind it. So the whole databases, being able to get the payments on a monthly basis, getting all the contracts right. I think that for us as a company was the most difficult part.
Mm-hmm. So how did you try to solve it? Was there anything in specific you did?
It was just an hard to for the entire team to do something really different. I mean, we're used to selling bikes, and now to build to rebuild our systems and to connect all the systems together to fulfill this monthly payments. I think that was the hardest. So it's it took a lot of blood, sweat, and tears from the team, and a lot of night work. But in the end, we managed to connect all the systems and solve it.
Cool. So earlier you said that one of the advantages of the closed system is also the customer loop, the feedback that you have all along. Is there any specific way how you gather the customer feedback and then synthesize what you should do with it next?
Yeah, what we do, that's handwork. So the customer support, they have systems to manage and archive all the feedback that comes in from customers. And so they make a monthly report and deliver that to R&D. So on a monthly basis, R&D gets feedback over what the biggest problems are.
Okay.
And I said customer support, but the bike. So in all the stores, we have bike doctors, and the bike doctors are in this system too. So the people on the R&D, they get a monthly report about the issues they have to improve. Mm-hmm.
By the way, these are great names: bike doctors, bike hunters. It sounds great. So speaking about also the subscription, right? What happens with bikes after a user returns them? Like, what I'm particularly interested in is, did you have to change the product, so the bike itself, so that it's more ready for the refurbishment if somebody returns it?
No, that doesn't change. Our bikes in general are pretty easy to refurbish. I mean, the frame, the bicycle frame, always, that can last for 25 to 50 years. So you only have to change the parts that have to be changed. What we do have to change on the bike is make it more durable. In the current systems, bikes in regular bicycle factories are made 95% ready to go, and then they go to the bike shops, and the bike shops make them ready to go. What we are changing is to get them straight out of the factory, completely ready to go. Mm. And the goal is to get them, that people get them out of the box and can ride them for 2 years without any maintenance or issues. To do that, we have to change some things on the bicycle designs. For example, the chain guard. In a regular bike, after 3 months, you have to go back to the bike shop to tension the chain a little bit, because there's also there's always a little bit stretch in it in the first 3 months. No mm-hmm. matter how good of a chain you buy, it's always the case. In the model of the past, there was no issue because you went back to the bike shop, it was around the corner, and you probably bought an extra rear carrier or helmet, I don't know. Everybody was happy. But now more and more people buy bikes online, and maybe even in the subscription model. You don't want people to have to go back to the bike shop after 3 months. So for example, in this case, we reinvented the chain guard and integrated a chain tensioner that keeps the chain on a perfect tension for at least the first 2 years on a daily use. So we're changing part by part the bicycle design to make it suitable for online sales.
Mm. Taco, where do you see Wenmoth in 5 years?
In 5 years, we want to be the global number one in commuting by bike. And we want to changed the way people commute in bikes. I think because of electric bikes, you already see a big change now in cities like London, New York, and Paris. Cities are really rediscovering the benefits of cycling. I think the bicycle sharing systems like the Santander bikes in London, Philippe in Paris, changed a lot. Cities are massively investing in cycling infrastructure again. So I really hope and I really believe that we will see much more bikes in the ever expanding cities.
Mm-hmm. So before we started recording, you said that you are a designer, right? But you always had some kind of affinity for business. Where does that come from?
Yeah, I've always been, and I always liked the combination of entrepreneurship and design. And I like designing my company just as much as designing products. And I really think it's interesting the combination. So companies that are designed around a product. Something that I think Apple kind of invented. Tesla, of course, is doing that a great job there. The whole company is designed about their main product. I really like Sonos too in that way. Mm-hmm. That's what I think is interesting to design the way you treat customers, the way you run your ERP systems, the way you run finance, to design everything around that single product, and to do that in a global way. So I think modern companies are very much focused on one product. But do that on a global level, and in such a way they can produce in a more efficient and better way, and deliver more quality for a better price. And I think that's very interesting.
Is there any particular, like speaking about the design of venture or design of a company, anything you are specifically proud of?
I'm most proud of the product. I can't stop smiling. Like our new bike opens with just when you touch the touchscreen, it recognizes your phone being in the neighborhood, and then the lock opens. It has sound, so it makes a sound like you open a lock like a car. And yeah, if I see that, or when I'm riding my own bike in a foreign city like New York, then I can't stop smiling, and that's what I like the most about it. Yeah.
Awesome. Just as a last question, where can listeners find more about you or Venmoov?
Of course, on our website on www.venmoov.com. I think that's the best starting point, and that's it.
Yeah, and then let's take it from there. Cool. Thanks again for your time, Taco. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. Thanks a lot.
Cool. That's it in today's episode. If you do like this show or this episode, I kindly ask you to consider leaving a review or a comment on iTunes or any other podcast app for that matter. This really helps me a lot in getting great guests, and also it helps other listeners find this show easier on these crowded podcasts apps. And again, if you're interested in how to measure design, to basically show the value of your design work to non-designers, and to also know yourself how you're doing, like how you can track the progress of your work, head to beyondusers.com. And there you can sign up for a 5-day free email course. And in there you will learn what design metrics are, how you can use them on your projects. And you'll also get to download a free design metric canvas, which is a framework that you can use in your projects to identify all the appropriate and necessary metrics. So for that, head to beyondusers.com. Cool, that's it for today. Thanks for your attention and see you soon.